Hello, everyone, and welcome to Off the Wire. I'm your host, Anthony Kent, and today we're going to be talking about third-party access management tools. I'll cover or give a few specific examples, and I would say one is BeyondTrust, and the other is SecureLink. I've seen both in action, have actually used both, and just want to kind of talk about the importance, why, you know, for some entities that may be a necessity to have or a good reason to have. Before I do that, though, I want to talk about just something that popped up at work last week and kind of just highlight one of the seven cooperative principles. If you don't know, there are seven cooperative principles, and I would say one of my favorite ones is cooperation among cooperatives. So last week we were replacing our service order system. It was basically just an upgrade from the vendor. Before they had like a third party write the software, or they bought it, one of the two. And then they wrote it in-house and were rolling it out. You know, what they say about assuming, I assumed that all the functionality from the old one would be on the new one, and was really never led to believe that there was any difference. So there wasn't a whole lot of planning into it other than rolling it out and just communicating. You know, we didn't do a thorough demo of it or anything like that. And after rolling it out, we actually identified about three different items that were missing or gaps from the old software to the new software. And anyways, we were rolling it out. You know, that's not, you know, when you're implementing it, is not the time to know about gaps. So I reached out to Andy Shepherd over at Jones Onslow. For those that don't know Andy, he is, you know, he's just an awesome person, and he's always willing to lend a helping hand. And he's just, you know, he's one of those people that make cooperatives better. He's done a lot over at Jones Onslow. I've stolen some ideas from him. But, you know, we both look at Salesforce. He was the one that initiated that project with some folks. And, you know, I jumped on his coattails, and, you know, we've been doing our own thing with that. Anyways, I reached out to Andy and shot him a text and just kind of explained the situation. And I would say within 30 minutes, he had the manager over at his co-op that deals with service orders reach back out to us, and she was awesome. So from there, we did a call with the manager over there for service orders, and I basically put her on speakerphone and had the dispatchers and the dispatcher's manager over with me. And anyways, they explained the couple things that we were trying to address. One was notifications, and then one was just basically a field that was no longer there. There was a completed field, and, you know, basically they kind of use it as a QA. So after the service order was complete, they would mark it as completed, and that just showed that dispatch had reviewed it. Our dispatchers, they told the issues to the lady over at Jones Onslow, and she said how they handled it, and, you know, it seemed pretty, you know, it was just thinking outside the box to use the system. And she was even kind enough she sent an email with screenshots on like their notification settings, so our folks could mimic it. Anyways, that was something that, you know, I'm sure we would have figured it out, but it would have took some time. And the vendor, they didn't really know, you know, they know how the system works, how to install it, but, you know, they're not doing service orders with their service order system. So anyways, it was a tremendous help, and it was something, you know, quick and on the fly. And, you know, Jones Onslow, they've got a lot going on, so I know they're busy, and I really appreciated them reaching out. But I'll say this, even outside that, I've got 1,000 stories of either co-ops or local governments, you know, just us partnering back and forth. One thing I'll mention that the co-ops in North Carolina, we've been very fortunate to be able to join the North Carolina local government organization, NCLGISA. That happened, I believe it was last year, maybe it's been 2 years now, but basically we got access to some tools that they do, some services that they do for free. And also we're part of the NCLGISA IT listserv. And I'll say this, the statewide NCLGISA listserv is probably more active than an NRECA IT listserv. So there's quite a bit going on there, and, you know, it's awesome to be able to have access to that as well. But anyways, we've helped people, and we've had other people help us. And that's something that, you know, I see, you know, with co-ops and local government organizations, you know, we do that, and that's what moves us forward a lot. So anyways, just wanted to highlight that. That's one of the things that I think is awesome about cooperatives is the cooperation among cooperatives principle. And just wanted to share that. So before I move on to the main part, just want to mention that this podcast, we're available on Apple and Spotify, basically any podcast app, as far as I know, I'm on it. And then also I post to YouTube and do the video. So if anyone wants to see my mug, they can go on YouTube and watch the video. The third-party access management, I feel like that is almost an essential product at this point. In this past year, we've had two vendors that have had cyber incidents. One impacted us, one did not. And I'll say this, you know, when a cyber incident happens, and this is completely understandable, this is not, you know, trying to bash anyone, but it can take between 24 and 72 hours, you know, for that to come out. If it comes out, I'll say that. These organizations, you know, they communicated this. They did the right thing and communicated this to their clients. I've seen some organizations, I've seen some co-ops have a cyber incident and it not make public view. So I really don't know what's going on there. And maybe it was just the level of it. But this is something that I've said a few times. I've just got this hunch. I don't know what it is that the cyber insurance organizations or companies are basically telling organizations not to report. You know, at a certain point, if something's so big, you really don't have a choice on it. But I think depending on the level, kind of feel like that's out there. I don't know that. I would love if someone's got an inside story, you know, I'd love to hear that. We can anonymously share that, but I'd be interested to see if that's the case. And then just outside the two vendors that we've had, just a local paper mill, I'll mention. So they outsourced all their IT. And I know there's a lot of organizations out there. I don't see how that ever works in your favor long term, especially with cybersecurity. But anyways, they outsourced their IT and their IT service provider actually got hacked. And in turn, they got to the paper mill and were able to shut down production and shut some things down, you know, through that service provider. So would the access control, you know, would that have handled this? Maybe not. But we'll kind of cover the pros and cons. And I'm just being generic. Like I said, the two main products that come to mind is SecureLink and BeyondTrust. I know a lot of folks using each. Us personally, we're using BeyondTrust, really like it, and it does us well. With that said, the pros of these products, it enhances security. You know, obviously, you know, the way they work in general, if you're not familiar with the products, is the vendor, it usually works by email, and what it is, they'll have a specific URL that they'll reach out to or go to, and they can request access, and then it'll shoot them an email. And basically, they're verifying themselves. They have to have access to that email account. And you make the security can be very granular. So, you know, granular security that allows for least privilege. So that's another pro of rolling out the software. But, you know, so you can say they can only have access to this server, you know, whether it's, you know, RDP or SSH. And you can also, it gives you audit capabilities. So it records the sessions. And I'll say this, you know, as far as recording the sessions, that's part of meeting compliance. So PCI, DSS requirement 8.1.5, it requires you to manage third-party access. And it says that remote connections, they should be enabled only for the time required. And both these products do that. You know, you can give them 2 hours, 4 hours, 30 minutes. You know, you can dial it into to whatever time frame you want to do. And then also the remote connections must be monitored. And I'll say this, you know, without a product like this, I don't know how anyone's doing it. You know, yes, if someone had LogMeIn or PC Anywhere or whatever is out there today, you know, yes, they could sit there at the screen and watch. But who has time for that? I don't know of anyone that has time for that. So with the recordings, you know, if you had an incident or whether just there was a mistake, you know, not everything's malicious. Maybe someone remoted in, did something, broke something, and you want to see what happened, you can go into that recording and watch it. So there's, you know, it's not just security. There's other benefits to that as well. And you can periodically audit that. Anyways, it's just a good thing to have in place. The other thing is centralized management. So before we had this product, we had some vendors, they had a VPN tunnel. We had some that used LogMeIn. We had some that used SplashPage, I believe it is. We had just a gamut of things. And, you know, we really didn't know who was on our network and off our network, you know, before we kind of did away with that. I will say this, we're not perfect. We're not following. We have most of our vendors on there. We do have one that still uses SplashPage, and we have some things in place to kind of to help with that. They can only access this one workstation, and the workstation, we actually have it up and display in the IT area. So we've got the monitors up on display, and we can see everything they're doing. And we have other controls in place. We also have stuff to where, you know, like we limit the hours that they can remote into. But anyways, we've got a few other things in place to help safeguard that. And matter of fact, they do our mapping for us. And I always get a kick at, you know, watching them do the mapping on the thing, on the computer. But we've got a few exceptions, and we're, you know, we need to shake that down later. We also have another one that they have a tunnel to their servers. Anyways, we're looking at changing that, but we'll see how that goes in the future. So the centralized management, it's great for us. So what it does is, you know, we've got, you know, so we're very fortunate. We've got 8 folks in the IT department, and what we do is, you know, if it's a, say it's a GIS vendor, they're wanting a remote in, you know, we'll have our GIS programmer, and we've got another lady, she deals with the metering and the service orders. And, you know, those two can approve that vendor. We have our CIS, our customer information system vendor, and the financial information system vendor, you know, certain people can approve those logins. Anyway, so basically we get a notification by email, and then we can approve it. The one thing we just recently changed with one of our vendors, this is just a small thing, but the what they're going to do, we can't make that a mandatory field. But the vendor we worked with, they basically have a process. They have, you know, how to access our systems wrote down. And we told them, you know, we want that to be filled out going forward. So we know what they're doing. So even though it's not a mandatory field, you know, they'll put it in their process, and we'll start getting that in the future, which I think is a good idea. Another positive of it is just password management, you know, so with both these tools, you can actually not share the password with them. I mean, you can make them give it to them to where it's available for them to use, but they won't actually see the password. So that's a good thing with password management. And then again, just compliance, there's, you know, with PCI, HIPAA, GDPR, there's lots of requirements out there, and, you know, both these tools usually can meet both those. There are some cons, and we've definitely hit those, especially rolling it out. We actually had another product before Beyond Trust, and we swapped it out. I'm not going to go into that because I know that product works for a lot of folks, but it does slow down support. So, you know, if they had, you know, like PC Anywhere or whatever remote tool, and they could just hop on the server in a matter of seconds, you know, now they've got to put in a request, and then it has to get approved. And then say they don't have a login, you know, cause they have to have a login. If they don't have that, then they have to register. The registration has to be approved, and then they have to request access. So, you know, you've turned, you know, what could be a 30-second login to, you know, it may take 2 to 4 minutes. And I'll say this, we've had some vendors out with Beyond Trust, we don't have as many issues, but we had when we first rolled out the first system, we had a lot of vendors had access getting on the system. I don't know if that was their issue or the product issue, but it does seem to be a little bit better, or it seems to be a lot better with Beyond Trust. Funny thing is we have a vendor that uses Beyond Trust for their organization, and they're the ones that we have the most issues with getting access onto our network, which I don't understand that. You know, they use Beyond Trust and we use Beyond Trust, but they are really the only vendor that we have that has issues getting on. And then I would say the last con, I'm sure there's other cons I'm not thinking of, but the other one is it's a reoccurring cost that's never going to go away. I will say I don't feel like these tools are too expensive for what they are. I mean, for what kind of safety they're bringing to your network. but it is a reoccurring cost that's never going to go away. And I will say that, you know, it's just like anything. Anytime you add a new product, you know, you're adding new risk to your network. And, you know, yes, this is mitigating a lot of risk, but, you know, it's a new system. It could have vulnerabilities. Something could go wrong with it. And then, you know, you've got all your passwords and stuff in one system. So there, you know, if something were to happen to that vendor, it would be a major issue. So I will say this, I haven't personally heard of any security issues with SecureLink and BeyondTrust, but it may just be ignorance, but I haven't heard anything major, you know, where people have had, you know, something happen big with that. So, but if something were to, you know, and you got all your eggs in one basket, it could be a big issue. So just to kind of recap, you know, there's I'm sure there's several other tools outside of SecureLink and BeyondTrust for allowing your vendors to access or other entities to access your network, but you should definitely consider having one and putting it in place. And I do think, you know, even this is one of those do as I say, not as I do. I do think it's ideal to have every single one of your vendors on that. And then also it can help protect them as well. You know, if you've got like a SSH connection, you know, from a vendor, and maybe you could get back on that, you know, you can reverse that SSH connection. You know, if you have a tool like this, it's gonna really help secure both of you. So I do think it's a good idea. You know, there's some pros and cons. It definitely, no matter what, it is, there's no one can really debate this. It will slow down your support. You know, how much, you know, maybe a few minutes. So, but we've had some where, you know, they kind of gave up. They just said they couldn't get in and they had to have you know, a coworker get in, which I don't understand that. You know, I don't think it's that difficult, but we have had that happen. So we try to stay on top of it and make sure we're doing approvals. But we, anyways, you need to take it careful with the approvals, because you can approve someone that's, you know, trying to work on your network by mistake. I can imagine if you were like, you know, four county, there's two four counties across the United States. There's us in North Carolina, there's one in Mississippi. But what if you were Tri-County? You know, there's Tri-County, Texas, there's Tri-County, Florida, Tri-County, South Carolina. You know, I would imagine that those co-ops, they've probably had vendors log on to the wrong network, you know, thinking it was one or the other. So I would say, you know, carefully approve, you know, when you're getting a request access, obviously you want to carefully approve that. Make sure, it, you know, it's your system. You're expecting that call or you're expecting, that request, you know. If not, then I would call and just kind of verify, you know, that they should be on your network working. So, before I get off here, I will say, I was invited on the IT Matters podcast. And so it was recently a guest on that. So please check that out. That can be found on Spotify or Apple, or I think it's on most podcast apps. But anyways, I was happy to be a guest on that and share some insight on cooperatives and kind of how technology impacts cooperatives, at least from my perspective. So with that said, I appreciate everyone's time for listening, and I hope you get something out of this. And until next time, take care. Thank you.